Please join me in the little book of Zephaniah. And we started this book yesterday. I'd like to go ahead and go back to verse number one and recap what little bit we were able to set up as an introduction. The word of He Who Is came to Zephaniah, which his name means something like the Lord's treasury. He is the son of Cushi, son of Gedaliah, son of Amariah, son of Hezekiah. Possibly this man is the great-grandson, or double-great-grandson, of King Hezekiah, the last great revivalist king previous to Josiah, whose reign we're looking at right now. And Hezekiah was back at the very end of the 8th century BC as a leader. So the rest of the introduction says, in the days of Josiah, the son of Amon, king of Judah. So Josiah was the last righteous king of the kingdom of Judah. He had a great Passover in the year 622 BC. And at that time, his boys were all less than 10 years of age, it would appear. But as time goes by, those boys get older, and apparently they start blossoming into unrighteous adults. And they're not the only ones. Other people in this kingdom start rebelling against the one true God of Josiah. They might not do it all out in the open, but the beginning of the end is there. And so that's why the book of Zephaniah, the prophecies of this prophet, are probably coming in right before the death of King Josiah in 609 BC. So here we go. This is the warning of God. I will utterly sweep away everything from the face of the earth. I would recommend to you that the better contextual understanding of the word here is for land, as in the land of Judah. Declares He Who Is, I will sweep away man and beast. I will sweep away the birds of the heavens, the fish of the sea, and the rubble, the junk, if you will, the debris of unrighteousness, the rubble with the wicked. I will cut off mankind from the face of the land, declares He Who Is. I will stretch out my hand against Judah and against all the inhabitants of Jerusalem. That verse right there, I think, is the controlling verse for understanding the word for land. And the reason God is bringing this judgment that is going to depopulate and really decimate even the animal kingdom of this area is this. I will cut off from this place the remnant of Baal, and the name of the idolatrous priest, along with the priests, those who bow down on the roofs to the host of heaven, those who bow down and swear to He Who Is, and yet they swear by Milcom, those who have turned back from following He Who Is, who do not seek He Who Is or inquire of Him. So we are having a rebellion go on, even under the reign, the later reign, I think, of good King Josiah. People are worshiping Baal, they're worshiping Asherah, they're worshiping the gods and goddesses of the sky. They are even worshiping the abominable god of the Moabites and the Ammonites, Milcom or Molech or Chemosh, if you will, the destroyer god. And they are perhaps secretly going to ceremonies where they get drunk and intentionally get pregnant, and they're burning up the babies from the last ceremony 9 months or 10 months or 12 months earlier. And so this is all going on, And God says, enough is enough. I am going to invoke the covenant curses from the book of Deuteronomy. I am going to depopulate the land. Many people are going to die, and others are going to be expelled from the land. And so that concept comes out in the phrase, Day of the Lord. We are in the habit, in our modern-day Christian thinking, to use that term, Day of the Lord, as a reference to the second coming of Jesus. That is the final 3.5-year time period of paganism and false worship that occurs right before Jesus comes back as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. But we need to appreciate that the phrase is about the judgment of God falling at other times as well. And so the destruction of the northern kingdom under the Assyrians at God's command, that was a day of the Lord. The destruction that's coming up against Judah and Jerusalem by the hands of the Babylonians, that's going to be a day of the Lord. The destruction of the temple in AD 70, after the Messiah, according to the book of Daniel, had been cut off, that destruction is also a day of the Lord. And so let's keep in mind that the context controls how the phrase is to be understood. So here's verse number 7. Be silent before he who is the Lord. It's the idea of Yahweh Adonai or Adonai Yahweh. For the day of he who is near. So the day of the Lord is right around the corner as Zephaniah writes these things down. He who is has prepared a sacrifice and consecrated his guests. Now the sacrifice here is, this is a tongue-in-cheek sort of description of people dying because of their sins, because of the judgment that's about to come upon them. That phrase is used in other passages in relationship to the destruction of the southern kingdom. On the day of he who is his sacrifice, I will punish the officials, that would be the leadership in government, and the king's sons. Remember, these last sons of King Josiah are growing up to be bad guys. We will watch them pay penalties for their wickedness, even though they're only in their 20s when that judgment comes. So God says, I will punish the officials and the king's sons and all who array themselves in foreign attire. Now, the foreign attire here is probably the idea that they are trying to curry favor with other countries like Egypt and Babylon and Assyria. And maybe there is something culturally significant about the clothing of those Gentile nations that ties them into the worship of pagan gods and goddesses. And so that's why they're going to be judged, is because they're not associating themselves with God. They're associating themselves with pagans. Verse 9. On that day, I will punish everyone who leaps over the threshold. That's a reference to a pagan custom that goes way back in history to the Philistines capturing the Ark of the Covenant and taking it and putting it in the temple of Baal. And the next morning after that, Baal, his idol, was laying on its face in front of the Ark of the Covenant. And so they put him back up, and the next morning, he hasn't just simply fallen over and bowed before the Ark of the Covenant. He has broken off his upraised hands and his head on the threshold of the building where the Ark of the Covenant had been placed. And so the Baal worshipers from that point onward leaped over the threshold rather than step on the place where Baal lost his hands and his head. It reminds me of something that we did when we were little bitty kids about step on a crack, break your mother's back. And I'm going to confess to you, even to this day, I sometimes avoid stepping directly on the crack of a sidewalk. It's just one of those weird holdovers from being a little bitty kid. So these guys, though, are still leaping over the threshold in honor of Baal. And those who fill their master's house with violence and fraud. So they are cheating. And that goes along with being a pagan. Because you've rejected he who is and his morality. And so God is saying, because of all this stuff, this is what's about to happen. On that day, declares he who is, a cry will be heard from the fish gate, a wail from the second quarter, and a loud crash from the hills. The fish gate seems to be on the western side of Jerusalem somewhere. The second quarter may, in fact, be a part of Jerusalem that grew up near the northern part of the temple, the northwestern part of the new temple. So you've got this noise that's coming out of that area because of the judgment that's falling. Verse 11, wail, O inhabitants of the mortar, for all the traders are no more, all who weigh out silver are cut off. The mortar may in fact be the little valley that existed on the west side of the Temple Mount, in a little gully there, between that and the next hill to the east, or excuse me, the next hill to the west. It was known in history at one time as the Cheesemaker's Valley, the Tyropean Valley. In modern day times, it's been kind of filled up because of debris over the years and construction in that area. Think of the area that's immediately west of the modern day Western Wall worship site where the Jewish people gather to do their prayers. That's probably the area that we're talking about. And it was an area where a market existed. And so what's being predicted here is God's judgment is going to put an end to the market. Verse 12, at that time I will search Jerusalem with lamps, and I will punish the men who are complacent. The word here is a funny idiom in Hebrew. It's the idea of the thickening of the sediment that's down in the bottom of wine containers. And that it's the idea, it's sluggish. It just is there. It doesn't flow like liquid wine does. So that's why these people are complacent. Those who say in their hearts, the place where they make their decisions, he who is will not do good, nor will he do evil. So God's going to bring judgment on the people that are like, whatever, God's not involved one way or the other in any of this. Verse 13, their goods shall be plundered, their houses laid waste. Though they build houses, they shall not inhabit them. Though they plant vineyards, they shall not drink from them. That actually is part of the Deuteronomy warning that the blessing of God will let you enjoy things that you didn't have to work hard for, but the curse of God lets you work hard for things you won't be able to enjoy. And so that's all going to come to pass very, very shortly. Verse 14, The great day of he who is near, near and hastening fast. Once Josiah's dead, things slide downhill very, very, very quickly. The sound of the day of he who is bitter. The mighty man cries aloud there. So even brave, tough guys are going to be scared and crying out. Verse 15, a day of wrath is that day, a day of distress and anguish, a day of ruin and devastation, a day of darkness and gloom, a day of clouds and thick darkness, a day of trumpet blast and battle cry against the fortified cities and against the lofty battlements. It's going to be scary, he says, when God's judgment comes against the city of Jerusalem, with all the Babylonian troops everywhere and Israelis dying right and left and being captured. And I guess this is probably a good place to point out that almost anywhere where the day of the Lord is mentioned, even if it's focused specifically on a day of the Lord from the past, the feeling of it carries forward to the ultimate day of the Lord, the day in which there will be great disaster leading up to the second coming of Jesus, when there will be great judgment. So the emotion of this book does carry forward to the final day of he who is. Verse 17, I will bring distress on mankind so that they shall walk like the blind because they've sinned against he who is. How does the blind walk? They stumble around trying to find their way, not sure what's happening next. It's the idea of being dazed. That's how these guys are going to be living in this day of he who is. Their blood shall be poured out like dust and their flesh like dung. A lot of death and destruction. Neither their silver nor their gold shall be able to deliver them on the day of the wrath of he who is. So they won't be able to buy their way out of the judgment. In the fire of his jealousy, all the earth shall be consumed. And again, I think the word land would be the better English translation here, because we're focused specifically on Judah and Jerusalem and the judgment that's coming against them. For a full and sudden end he will make of all the inhabitants of the land. Gather together, yes, gather, O shameless nation, before the decree takes effect, before the day passes away like chaff, before there comes upon you the burning anger of he who is, before there comes upon you the day of the anger of he who is. So there is this warning given by Zephaniah that you need to get your act together. You need to repent before this judgment comes. Zephaniah's job is to find at least some who will change their attitudes before it's too late. Seek he who is, all you humble of the land, who do his just commands. Seek righteousness. Seek humility. Perhaps you may be hidden on the day of the anger of he who is. So those that are actually trying to do the right thing, and those that will repent and join them, they have the potential of being among the righteous remnant that will be carried away into Babylonian exile and survive this judgment. Verse 4, for Gaza shall be deserted. Ashkelon shall become a desolation. Ashdod's people shall be driven out at noon, and Ekron shall be uprooted. These are four of the five cities of the Philistines. The only city not specifically cited is Gath. But these are cities to the west of Judah. They had been at times under Judah's control, but when the Babylonians sweep through, they too will be taken down. Verse 5, woe to you inhabitants of the seacoast. That's the Mediterranean seacoast. You nation of the Kirithites. The Kirithites lived in the southern part of the land of Judah. They seem to have been immigrants, ancient immigrants, from the Mediterranean islands, island of Crete in particular, I think. Verse number 5 continues, the word of he who is against you, O Canaan, land of the Philistines, and I will destroy you until no inhabitant is left. So God's judgment is not just simply targeted against Judah. It's also targeted against the Philistines and the Kerethites, the people living near Judah who are probably acting in the same unrighteous fashion as Judah. Verse 6, and you, O seacoast, shall be pastures with meadows for shepherds and folds for flocks. So they're going to be reduced to basically rural area. The seacoast will become the possession of the remnant of the house of Judah, on which they shall graze, and in the houses of Ashkelon they shall lie down at evening. For he who is their God will be mindful of them and restore their fortunes. So a little bit of good news hiding in here is that the remnant that goes away into exile, they'll be coming back, or at least their descendants will be coming back. And some of those descendants will be living in the former Philistine area and raising sheep. And that's exactly what did happen, by the way. Verse 8, I have hurt the taunts of Moab and the revilings of the Ammonites, how they've taunted my people and made boasts against their territory. So the Moabites and the Ammonites, which would be to the west, let's try that one more time, the east of Judah, they'd be over on the other side of the Dead Sea and the other side of the Jordan Valley. They've been making threatening comments toward the nation of Judah. And God says, I'm well aware of what's going on down there. And so you guys are going to be judged too. Therefore, as I live, declares he who is of the hosts, the God of Israel, Moab shall become like Sodom, and the Ammonites like Gomorrah, a land possessed by nettles and salt pits and a waste forever. The remnants of my people shall plunder them, and the survivors of my nation shall possess them. So those areas are going to come under judgment, and it's going to be bad. It's going to become a wasteland like Sodom and Gomorrah. And eventually, it will come under the control of the remnant of the Jewish people. And that did come to pass after the Babylonian exile was over. But there is an ultimate time that all of these lands will be under the control of the remnant of Israel, the righteous remnant of Israel, and that'll be the new heaven and new earth version of Israel, when it will be populated by the redeemed and resurrected saints. Verse 10, this shall be their lot in return for their pride, because they taunted and boasted against the people of he who is of the hosts. He who is will be awesome against them. Remember, the word awesome is the idea of scary. That's the original understanding of this word. So he who is going to be scary against them. For he will famish all the gods of the earth, and to him shall bow down each in its place all the lands of the nations. Once the dust settles at the end of earth's history, all these false gods and goddesses, they will be gone. And everybody will bow the knee. Specifically, bow the knee to Jesus Christ. Every knee shall bow. Every tongue shall confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. That's a New Testament quote. So some of them won't want to do that, but they'll have no choice. You also, O Cushites, shall be slain by my sword. That's down south of Egypt, the Ethiopians. And he will stretch out his hand against the north and destroy Assyria. And he will make Nineveh a desolation, a dry waste like the desert. Now, you remember that Assyria caused all the trouble for northern Israel, took them into exile. And Nahum was the last prophet that talked about the ultimate destruction of Nineveh, the capital city of Assyria. So here is Zephaniah chiming in on the exact same thing. Nineveh is going to be a desolation. That'll happen in 612 BC. A dry waste like the desert. Herds shall lie down in her midst. All kinds of beasts, even the owl and the hedgehog, shall lodge in her capitals. A voice shall hoot in the window. Devastation shall be on the threshold, for her cedar work will be laid bare. The picture here is of an abandoned and ruined capital city, Nineveh, that is now the home of wild animals. Verse 15, this is the exultant city that lived securely, that said in her heart, I am. See, that's an insult to God, right? I am, and there is no one else. What a desolation she has become, a lair for wild beasts. Everyone who passes by her hisses and shakes his fist. And so again, Zephaniah being written very close to the time that that happens at the end of the 600s BC. Well, we'll save chapter number 3 for the next time we get together in God's inspired word. See you then.